Prepare the way of the Lord, make straight his paths. The minor prophet Baruch reminds us that God has decreed the flattening of high mountains, the filling of the valleys. And you've just heard from the prophet Isaiah the same theme, that the valleys would be filled in and the winding ways made straight. Wasn't so long ago, in travelling up north, we would see such activity with the scrapers, the graders and the bulldozers around Holbrook, cutting into the side of hills, straightening roads, pulling out trees, making the way straight, easy, more comfortable. We all know on a bushwalk or driving a car, it's a lot of winding roads or up and down. It's very tiresome, bothersome. In fact, the hills and the winding roads become obstacles to our destination. We are destined on our pilgrimage for heaven. That's our goal. And God is reminding us, I'm going to take the obstacles out. I'm going to remove all things that hinder your progress in the way of sanctification and ultimately salvation. And John the Baptist, that's what his purpose was, to prepare the way, to get rid of all the issues and obstacles that cluttered up people's lives so that they might be more open to the will of God, to the will of the Messiah, Jesus Christ. And so it was an allegory, the hills and valleys, that we now understand better. How many people have obstacles to coming to Mass on Sunday? Oh, it's the wrong time, the church is too hot, it's too cold, or last time I went was when Grandma was buried and I can't... All obstacles, excuses, and we need to help people reconcile those issues, put them aside. And as we meet people in our preparations for Christmas, let's not finish a conversation without asking someone, would you like to come to Christmas Mass? A woman came the other day to the presbytery. I buried her mother a few years ago, and I've never seen her since. And she was wanting a baptismal certificate for her daughter, who's getting married next year in a northern parish. And as I gave it to her, she said, is there any cost, Father? And I said, only one. And she comes to Mass at Christmas time. She said, oh, we're too busy. Said, there's a vigil Mass at 6, 7 and 9. Are you too busy all of those times? Oh, I said, God's waiting. Twist the arm. Oh, okay, all right, okay. That's what we're going to just encourage them. Take away the obstacles, the issues, and just make the way easier for them. Not for an invitation, a smile, I'll pick you up. I'll show you where it can help. And that's what we need to do, to evangelise people, to give them a sense of what we call hope. It's the second Sunday of Advent. The first focused on faith to a certain degree. Next week it's on charity. But this week we talk about hope. And the person who gave hope in preparation for Christ, who fulfills all our hopes, was John the Baptist. But firstly, hope is a theological or God-centred virtue. It resides not in the intellect, what we think, but rather in our will, what we desire. And therefore, hope is often likened to the heart, because our desires come from the heart. A desire for God in this life and heaven in eternity. And hope is vital to our salvation. It's not an optional extra. It's a must-have. Think of hope like a bridge between here and there, between Victoria and New South Wales. You can't cross the Murray without the bridge. We can't go to heaven without hope that takes us from time unto eternity, from here to there. So we need to foster hope and help people get rid of the obstacles that clutter up and perhaps can bring down through despair and presumption this bridge of our salvation. Hope. How many people are losing hope? Oh, it's been too long, Father, since I've been to Mass. Oh, well, the roof would fall in and you don't know what I've done. Hope. In the year of mercy, we'll hear more about hope, because hope takes away the misery and replaces it with mercy. John the Baptist was hope-filled. His task wasn't easy, but he witnessed to the truth and prepared people for Christ. And he did so by witnessing to the truth with his very own life. We recall that John was a martyr. He gave his life for the sanctity of marriage. He witnessed unto his own blood. He lost his head in love with God's holy institution, sacred marriage. Today we need more witnesses for the truth, as was John. Even if some of our politicians have to metaphorically lose their heads, so be it, lest they lose their souls in eternity. So we ask God to help us as we prepare for Christmas, and we're putting up the tree and the crib. All these are signs of hope in the home. They're necessary. We are not angels. We need to see the reality of the presence of Christ coming into our midst. And so these are signs of hope, and we shouldn't just throw things together, but gradually put things together, our crib, add a few things each week, put a few more things in the tree, gradually build up that sense of anticipation, expectation, because hope works in that manner. It gradually builds one step upon the other, like a bridge just doesn't appear. It takes a time and a lot of bricks to form. And to help us in our hope-filled journey or bridge-building project in preparation for Christmas, we turn to the great saints who are heroes. We need to foster a love of the saints in the home and in our hearts, because if we don't, other people will take their place. How often do people dress up as Spider-Man, Batman, Superman, and focus upon these famous heroes rather than real people? Now, I don't know about you, but I don't really believe Superman is factual. In fact, all those modern-day Marvel superheroes, be it the Hulk, Green Lantern, they're all, get ready for it, I'm sorry if this hurts, they're fiction. That's right, they never really existed. And if you want to be really cruel, I'm going to go all the way and say this, even though some of you will go and watch the film, Star Wars is not real. I'm sorry, it's fiction too. It's fiction, it's fake, it's not reality. I've always liked Superman, or perhaps Batman more than Superman, but at the bottom of the day, or at the end, I do know they're not real. God is, John the Baptist, and get ready for it, Santa is real. Yes, Santa is real. I say that because there's fiction and there's myth. Fiction is not reality. Myth has an element of reality in it. And Santa is part of myth, or what we call mythos. Myth embraces the concrete and the abstract, the singular and the universal. Behind the legends of the Santa Claus commercialized image we see everywhere, so much so that some people think Christmas is all about Santa, lies an actual person, and his feast day is today. Who am I talking about? Saint Nicholas. Saint Nicholas was an actual person. That's why there's a certain amount of reality behind the Santa myth, because he did exist. He was born around 280, died around 350. He lived in Turkey when it was still a Christian country, or there parts Christian, before Islam invaded the Middle East. He was the bishop of Myra, grew up in a good Catholic family. More than likely back then, the Eastern bishops had beards, and that would have turned grey in time, so you have your big beard on St. Nicholas. He also witnessed with his life for the faith, therefore wore red in our liturgical colours. Behind all this was a man very much known for his gentleness and kindness to children. Of course, many legends and stories have grown up about him providing the dowry for three girls and so forth. But there must be some truth to the fact that he was a generous person, a kind soul, as is often the case, like St. Vincent de Paul. Furthermore, he was an ardent defender of the faith. Nicholas travelled to Nicaea to sign the creedal statement we're going to say in a few minutes' time. There's only two creeds in the church, the Apostles' Creed and the Nicene Creed. They're the two basic creeds or symbols of faith. When the second was signed in 325, at that council, Nicholas, Saint Nicholas, was present and signed on the dotted line. Many bishops rejected that creed later and became apostates. Nicholas didn't. He witnessed until his death, to the faith that we shall profess in a few moments. So we have a connection with him. When you say the words today, think of Saint Nicholas.
In Eastern Europe, there are 2,000 churches dedicated to his name, and Russia has him as a co-patron. So he's quite famous, and during the Renaissance, his cult of the generous, kind, ancient, faithful bishops spread to Europe, and from Germany to Holland. And when the Dutch went to America, and of course they don't call him St. Nicholas, they call him Sinterklaas, Klaas being the shortened version of Nicholas, you get Sinterklaas, which is very close to Santa Claus. And of course they promoted his cult in America, and eventually in the 30s, Coca-Cola becoming popular, wanted a patron, just like a football team has a dragon as a patron, and we have a kangaroo stuck on our planes. They adopted St. Nicholas as their patron, and ever since he's become famous. And of course, there's many legends and stories that have grown up about him, but the reality is an actual concrete person. So St. Nicholas, it's his feast day. We ought to acknowledge him today. The world always has. Let us thank him for his generosity and pray that we might be generous like him, but moreover, be people filled, as he was, with the virtue of hope. Praise be Jesus Christ.